This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger. You're right, 42 degrees, and stepping outside, there's a chilly wind this morning, not raining. But anyway, good morning and welcome to the Saturday morning show, our weekly get-together. And this morning, as I mentioned to Matt, Jim Fazell returns to the Saturday morning show. That's our official sign that we are finally into spring and summer and the growing season. Jim, who at one time was with the University of Illinois Extension Service, now in business for himself. He's been with us on the program for over 40 years here on WGN Radio, and he'll be talking about some of the things you can do at this point when it comes to planting in the garden, what is safe now and what, well, could be affected by frost if there is a late frost. My guess is tonight we're going to see frost in the low areas, in the valleys and so on, in the Midwest. But that's weather at this time of the year. And here on the Saturday morning show, we take a look at what's coming up. And there are several interesting events that will be coming up in June. First of all, in June, the June Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm. Again, a large number of those taking place in Wisconsin. And we'll be talking about that. But we'll also talk about a Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm right here. He's back. He's here. He's Jim Fazell, who has been talking to us about lawns, trees, flowers, gardens, and everything that you'll find in your lawn for probably 40 years. Jim, good morning and welcome back.
Well, thank you, Orion. It's been a while since we visited, but it's nice to be back and to visit with you and talk a little bit about gardening. You know, haven't the flowers been great, by the way?
They have been absolutely beautiful, I'll tell you. Well, the trees particularly, the plum trees and the crab trees and so on at Del Webb, Sun City, and Huntley, absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, cool weather has let them, kept them on for a long time, and we didn't have any good freeze that killed them, and it's been moist enough, so it's a good spring for that. By the way, we need to talk the rain. We've had enough rain this week, the last two or three weeks.
I think we have, yes, and it's making the grass grow. What do we do about that?
Well, I'll tell you, we need to think about gardening between the rains, and one of the things you need to do is mow your grass if you can. You don't want to mow it when it's too wet because it'll plug up your mower, and it also makes ruts out there in the grass. But mow it when you have time to do it. Now, if the grass gets too tall, you need to do something about that, too. You can't just go out and cut 6-inch grass down to 2 inches because there won't be any blades left. So you need to remove only about a third of the leaf each time. Set the mower up high if you need to do that, then mow it off, and then set it back down. Mow it one day one direction, another day another direction until you get it back down where it belongs. Probably need to collect all those wet clippings so the neighbors don't think that you're in the hay business, because it will lie on the grass like hay and it will smother the grass that's under it. Be sure that after all is said and done, you set your mower back to the normal 2.5 inches. Fertilizer, if you haven't fertilized this year, it's probably a good time to do it. You want to get that on before Memorial Day if you can. That's only a couple more weeks. Seems like that's hard to believe, but it is. Crabgrass preventer, people that want to put that down have missed the date because crabgrass is already germinated, and that only keeps the crabgrass from germinating. And it's too early for grub proofing. Wait till about 4th of July for that, even though the ads say to put it on now.
Okay, that takes care of the lawn pretty much, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I wish it was that easy.
So let's go to the garden.
Okay. Well, you don't want to try to spade the garden over if it's still too wet. And actually, if you can take a handful of soil, squeeze it into a ball and crumble it, that's fine. If it won't crumble, it's too wet. You don't want to dig it when it's too wet because you'll make clods out of it and it won't be good for the rest of the year. You can plant practically everything that you want to right now. All kinds of plants can be set out, like the broccoli, the tomatoes, the peppers, herbs, and flowers, and so forth. But you need to be prepared for a late frost. In fact, there's still about a 25% chance of frost. And, in fact, some of the outlying areas, as the temperatures here in this part of the area are going to be down into the 30s, there could be frost in the outlying areas. So if you have stuff planted, put a bed sheet over it so that it'll be protected for this night. You know, we talk about when is the frost-free date. The frost-free date means average date, which is the 5th of May, but the latest date of last frost is about Memorial Day. Of course, our old friend Nick Skoufis used to say you don't plant tomatoes until the full moon in May, which is actually next Saturday.
Right.
And you wait till catalpa leaves are the size of your hand. My catalpa tree doesn't have leaves on it yet.
You got to wait ahead of you then.
Right, we've got to wait. Well, I think that's just a guideline. Anyway, you can also seed out in the garden. You can put in beets and beans and carrots and chards, just about everything except the warm weather types. And you want to avoid putting out stuff like seeding stuff like okra or cucumbers or squash because the soil is too cold right now, and they're not going to germinate. And they could rot off if it stays as wet as it is. You need to haul out the weeds as they appear. Incidentally, you know, we usually have a big problem with the maple and elm seeds. This year, we're not having a problem. In fact, one of my friends said, you know, we don't have any elm seeds in our swimming pool this year. Well, that's because there aren't any. Why aren't there any? It has to do with the weather last year. There was a tremendous seed load last year. We have alternate bearing like you do in fruit trees and try to prevent. So some years you get seeds, and if you have a lot of them, the next year you don't have any. Rabbits are a problem, and their little bunnies are already out.
Yes, they are.
You need to fence them out. That's about all you can do, fence them out with chicken wire around the parts of your garden that they like. And incidentally, they won't eat things like squash. There's some things that they just don't like, so you don't need to worry about that. But the things like peppers and stuff like that they'll eat, beans in particular, you need to fence those rabbits can't get in there. Keep in mind, too, that if the rains stop, the soils are going to dry out very quickly, and our good friend Greg Solier, the weather magician, says that rains may be less frequent as the spring progresses, so keep your eye on that. I wanted to talk just real quickly about some general gardening information because a lot of people are starting to garden, and there's some reasons for that. One is that food costs are pretty high. A lot of people are staying home instead of going on expensive vacations, and some people say, well, if I'm going to take care of my yard, I might as well get something of value from it. And the most productive kinds of vegetables that you can grow in your garden for the time and expense would be tomatoes, and these should be caged or staked up, pole beans, squash, and broccoli. And just for interest, if you have a little 10 by 10 or 12 by 12 garden, you're going to need 5 tomato plants. That'll cost about $2. You'd need about 5 sweet pepper plants for about $2. You might have one hill of zucchinis. You can buy a whole package of seeds for about $2. And the total outlay there would be about $6. So what do you get for your money? You're going to get 50 pounds of tomatoes, and at $3 a pound, that would be $150. 25 pounds of peppers, at maybe 2.5 a pound, that would be about $60. 20 pounds of zucchini at $2 a pound would be about $40. So your total return for your $6 investment is about $250. Of course, you put a lot of labor into it, but you're getting good exercise, you have the fun of watching things to grow, and you got the satisfaction of knowing you did it all by yourself.
What a great way to look at gardening. It's more than a hobby, but it should also be a hobby for people, and it's something that they should enjoy. But, yeah, that's interesting to see the economics on how much from a 10 by 10-foot area you could save at the grocery store.
I thought that would be interesting. I just ran across that, and that's I don't know exactly how accurate it is because maybe the produce doesn't cost that much during the season, but it's still a good idea to go out and grow it yourself. Couldn't be fresher.
Good. We'll look forward to weekly visits for the most part during the summer, and stay in good health, and thank you for joining us, sir.
Good to be with you, Orion. Look forward to it.
Jim Fizell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. 22 minutes after 5, a chilly morning over much of the Midwest today here on the Saturday Morning Show. And it has been a while since we've checked in with Tim Andreessen at the CME Group here in Chicago. Tim is the Managing Director of Agricultural Products for the CME Group. So earlier this week, I got him on the line, and my first question to him was a question from a listener who earlier this spring heard us talk about the fact the CME Group was closing the trading floor in New York. This listener wanted to know if that would impact the trading floors here in Chicago, and this is Tim's answer.
No. You know, I can't really speak to New York, but what I can tell you is that our agricultural trading floor in Chicago, which is now just options, is still a really vibrant part of our ecosystem. You know, there's a lot of products that they trade there. Customers want to be able to access that market, and we think it's still a really important and critical part of the trading environment that we offer.
So let's talk about volume. Are we up or down compared to a year ago?
Well, you know, Ori and I was thinking about this and, you know, getting ready for our conversation. And, you know, we've had some really interesting years here. You know, last year, if you remember, we kind of started off and didn't think much was going to happen. We had big stocks, and then, you know, we had a lot of volatility. And this year, you know, we ended up coming into the year with good supplies again. And the first quarter was a bit slow, but I'll tell you what, April just took off.
I saw the numbers, yeah. What happened?
You know, with too wet here, too dry there, not sure how many beans we have where. And, you know, it just really took off. Our, for example, corn and options volume were up 55% from April a year ago. Overall volumes were up 52%. We set records for bean, meal, and oil trade. We set records for hard wheat. It was just, you know, we had two all-time record days. There was just a lot of activity. And, you know, just looking at the markets yesterday, it looks like the volatility isn't over.
Is part of that volume caused by funds coming back into the market?
Oh, you know, that's more of a long-term driver of the market is the composition of the market. I think what you see right now is just a lot of activity and a lot of volatility around the fundamentals of the marketplace. You know, when you're seeing weather markets, although, you know, we kind of think more of weather markets in the U.S., but in this case, weather markets in South America, you know, start to impact the supply and demand, and then you see, you know, USDA reports come out. That's just a lot of fundamentals driving the volatility in the marketplace.
What about new programs at the CME Group that would involve farmer producers, whether it be livestock or grain? What are you working on?
Well, you know, one of the things that's a little bit different, and that's, you know, we talk a little bit about products a lot when we talk, but one of the things that's very new that we're very excited about is we just recently launched the new Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. And, you know, people that are, you know, kind of follow the markets, you know, think about, say, for example, the Michigan, you know, Michigan barometer of purchasing and
right.
Some of these other economic barometers. So we really saw a need in the agricultural space for something like that. And so we worked, you know, we went out to quite a few land-grant universities to get some different ideas and ultimately decided to work with Purdue to come up with this Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. And it's something that's going to be published monthly to help give people a sense of, you know, what's going on in the ag economy.
I know the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Report comes up with some numbers. When you start this, will you have a number that we start and then we go up or down from that, or how will that work?
Yeah, so it's indexed at 100, and then, you know, we'll go up and down from that number.
And who do you think will use the barometer?
Well, you know, there's a lot of potential uses for the barometer if you think about it. You know, one, it's just a general nationwide measure of health of the U.S. ag industry.
Okay.
And, you know, particularly if you're an economist and you're trying to look at parts of the industry, it kind of gives you a reference point. So that, you know, you can say, well, look, you know, hey, this segment is down, but, you know, the whole economy was down, the whole ag economy was down, or vice versa. You know, And we think that there's a wide, beyond that, there's a wide variety of applications for producers, traders, finance industry people, journalists, just anybody that wants to get a broad sense of how the ag economy is operating.
Well, Tim, I know you had the first release, but can you give us an idea of when it will be released? And you already said it'll be monthly.
Yes, it will. It'll be the first Tuesday of every month that the number will come out. And for, you know, your listeners who want more information, they can find that at purdue.edu/agbarometer.
And just out of curiosity, what was the number in the first release?
It was 106, so that's a good sign.
Well, good. We'll try to keep it that way. And, Tim, always a pleasure to visit with you, and thank you for joining us this morning. We've been talking to Tim Andreessen, CME Group Managing Director of Agricultural Products.
That was our visit earlier this week, where things are always happening at the CME Group. Among the many things taking place, I mentioned June Dairy Month, Dairy on the Farm, Breakfast on the Farm events coming up in June. There's another note I got this week, because I attended a one-room, eighth-grade country school in Vernon County, Wisconsin, in my childhood. Well, this came across my desk. North Grove School, a one-room schoolhouse located at 26745 Brickville Road in Sycamore, Illinois, will be holding the annual open house on Saturday, June 18th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Sunday, June 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. This school, which was in operation from 1878 to 1952, now on the National Historical Registry, and during this open house will be celebrating agriculture from that era. So you're invited to come see a one-room schoolhouse and enjoy the tales of country living generations ago. You'll see why I am what I am, because I went to a one-room, eighth-grade country school. Thank you, Roger. I'm Orion Samuelson here on WGN Radios. We're coming up to 24 minutes before 6 o'clock on this Saturday morning. A chilly one at our studios here in Huntley this morning, 42 degrees. And as Roger said, frost warnings out tonight. Time now for Samuelson Says. It's sponsored by the folks at Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion, this week sending congratulations to those agricultural graduates. But the folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products, products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover, the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, as well as color-fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around since 1947, and it's still number one. To learn where to find all of the quality Wink products, simply go to wink.com. That's WHINK.com. And now this week's edition of Samuelson Says.
As the college year comes to an end, I want to take a moment to salute our young people, particularly our young people in agriculture who are getting an education to pursue a career in agriculture or agribusiness. The Illinois Soybean Association presented scholarships to seven college students recently, and in turn, the students were asked to write the association and share their ideas for career goals and future goals. Let me quote a young lady who said, "I chose to pursue a major in crop sciences to have a career in agriculture so that I could play a part in feeding our exponentially growing population. Like Norman Borlaug, my goal is to become a plant breeder so I can design the highest yielding, pest and disease resistant, nutritious, rigorous plants for farmers to grow to feed the world."
Another young lady said, "Today's society is rapidly changing with many innovations on the brink of changing the world. One of these is the development of biotechnology and GMOs. They have the prospect of changing the world for the better through potentially increasing yields to help feed the world, developing crops to survive extreme conditions, and decreasing pesticide use. The unlimited potential to positively impact the world is why I chose plant breeding as my future. I hope that pursuing a research career within plant breeding and soybeans is the way I can make an impact and help the world become a better place." A young man said, "I have chosen to go into crop sciences for a few reasons. Not coming directly from a farm can make you stick out sometimes, but I feel it also gives me an advantage. I was always very interested in farming practices and how something as small as a seed could grow. This curiosity continued through school as I excelled in genetics courses and saw the potential to do amazing things." Supporters of PETA and Humane Society, I hope you're listening. These are the young people you condemn for trying to do a better job at county fairs with their livestock. These are people who are going to feed the world. Stop picking on them. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And coming up, Max Armstrong will talk to Greg Groh about another interesting week in the grain and livestock markets. So stand by. That's coming up when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, joining us in the studio here in the midst of planting season. We probably should address that first. It has gone well, a rapid start and rapid progression through the planting, but a screeching halt for many growers because of excessive rains.
Slowed down this week. We got off to a very good start in the West, as you noted, and we're ahead of the five-year average in corn as we started this recent week. Rains came, slowed things down, and it's also been pretty cold up around the Great Lakes, and I've heard some issues with some talk of some replants, some corn that went in late April that just didn't come up very well, and so it's a struggle, but nowhere near the type of struggle we saw in the East last year, at least so far, Max.
There was the perception, I know, that with so much corn being planted early, that that could enhance the yield per acre on this crop. Is that still the opinion at this point?
Well, I think that when you study corn and yield potential, when you get a lot of the crop planted, at least half of it or more in the ground by the first week of May, you have strong potential to achieve, at least historically, trend line yield. All that depends on summer weather, but when we get it planted early, we know that we'll pollinate a great part of it, maybe ahead of the hottest part of the summer.
Well, so many other factors have come into play on this radar screen with an amazing rally in the month of April that continued into the early days of May, and it has been to the surprise and amazement of just about everyone, hasn't it?
Oh, I think so. I think the soybean rally that you've just noted here has caught a lot of analysts and trade participants off guard. The extent of the damage to the Argentine soybean crop is still being debated, but with Argentina representing roughly, the largest soybean oil exporter in the world and representing about 50% of the global trade in soybean oil, it obviously caused concern. It's hard to know just what the extent of things are. USDA did lower its estimate of the Argentine crop, and it's quite probable that we'll see further downward revisions over the next couple of months.
We'll come back to that momentarily, the global supply. But the fund presence here in this market has made a big difference, has it not? Those big managed funds?
Certainly managed money seeks opportunities. They seek places where disruption in thinking can occur, and this is a good example of that. A lot of traders were wondering why all of the interest in soybeans from the funds, but then the report comes and we see the aggressive demand pace now expected because of the somewhat lower South American crop sizes. Whether that demand is real, we won't know for 6 or 8 months, but it certainly turned the trade psychology here.
It has provided a magnificent opportunity for growers, hasn't it, to do some pricing?
When you look at where we were at the 1st of March to where we are now, soybeans have rallied almost $2, and we're now at a price that's profitable for growers. So it'll be interesting, Max, to see if this rally bought some bean acres by the time we get to the June acreage report.
Going back to that report earlier this week, the supply-demand numbers, you mentioned the export situation there. And, of course, you can't talk about bean exports without talking about China for a moment or two. And everything we hear coming out of China is about a slower growth of that economy, a lower GDP, lower imports of iron ore, of copper, of oil. But it is a good reminder, isn't it, that you can't talk about all commodities in one broad stroke. People will quote the CRB index and talk about what's happening with commodity demand around the world. But when you're talking about China, there's a difference among commodities, isn't there?
And you're talking about food. And you're talking about animal feed for the world's largest hog production cycle. And despite the slowdown there, their imports of soybeans has remained quite strong. And
in fact, I believe the report earlier this week was that in April, they imported more beans from the world than in any other month.
Exactly, and I think that's part of the demand structure that the USDA is noting. Now that maybe South America just doesn't quite have the supply to meet China's needs, some of that demand's going to come here.
Historically, these supply-demand reports, do they often hold surprises for us?
Well, the last couple of years, we haven't seen the types of price reaction that we saw last week with the supply-demand report. Going back 3 or 4 years ago, we had a lot of these type of limit moves, whether they be up or down, surrounding stocks reports, supply-demand reports, acreage reports. We got into a world of surplus, and the reports were less impactive on market direction. Now we're starting back into a situation where if the bean yield, we're now, I would call it sensitive to yield more so than we were 90 days ago as far as the outlook. When the demand has increased, at least on paper, as much as we've seen here, we're either going to need more acres or we're going to need the ability to maintain at least trend line soybean yield this year to avoid a tightness that we haven't seen for 2 or 3 years.
Weather is really going to be critical now, isn't it? And the weather forecasts hold a lot of promise for moving this market around.
Well, and that's the big issue. We're coming off of a record El Nino event that's impacted global weather for the last 2 years. We're entering into a potential La Nina event, and the implications of that are yet to be seen. But some believe it could cause a dry, warm end to the summer growing season, and that could especially be price impactive on the soybean complex.
You spent a lot of time talking with growers, I know. Did you sense a big lift in spirits with this kind of a rally that we've seen April 1st and then the extension into the month of May?
No, I think it's definitely been a surprise. I mean, corn is at or just below cost, and you haven't seen the type of price movement in corn that we saw. We've had some blips in the corn market, but it comes back down to the reality that we're going to have ample acreage in corn, and a trend line yield there keeps our supply very comfortable. The soybean situation becomes very different, and I think it definitely has brightened the eyes of growers. And we'll have to see, like I mentioned, whether that results in some increase in soybean acres.
When we look ahead toward that report, that'll be coming up in the end of June, is that right?
Mm-hmm. There'll be one more supply-demand report in June, and then we have our very important acreage report and stocks report at the end of the month.
Growers surely have taken advantage of this for marketing opportunities.
Right? I see that as I deal with my customers. I think the bean rally has attracted a lot of cash selling. I don't think there's been a lot of interest in shorting the board given the volatility that we've had, but I definitely think that cash price movement as we approach $10 here out of the field for Midwestern growers certainly was attractive and caught some attention.
Was this a wake-up call for commercial users? Did it put them on edge, or are they still kind of fat and sassy and saying, hey, you know, we don't have to worry about this that much yet?
It's interesting. We haven't seen a big pickup yet in new export business out of the U.S. From the users you mentioned, but we have seen some oil business. You saw China step in and buy some oil. We've seen some interest in corn with Mexico and others. Saudi Arabia bought some corn last week. So I think people are sensing that, importers are sensing that while supplies look adequate right now, any kind of an upset in weather this year could have a dramatic effect. So you have seen some demand. And pick up here.
What about domestic users? I think of, for example, food companies and those who have to acquire feed for livestock and poultry. Has this been a wake-up call for them saying, well, wait a minute, we better start to to make sure we're taken care of here?
I think a little bit of that. I think you've seen a little bit of that in the soybean meal market with the change in dynamics that's occurred there. I think there's still plenty of corn around. I don't sense an urgency to acquire an inventory of corn right now. Most folks are still kind of on a hand-to-mouth basis there because corn is moving on the rallies and there's plenty of it out there. But I think the structure of the soybean market has changed for the time being. We could certainly have a sharp decline in prices if we end up with strong yields and good weather during August. But it's definitely changed the outlook for the soybean market for the moment.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services. We always enjoy our visits with you. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you, Max.
We're at 5.5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time on a rather cool Saturday morning across the Midwest after rains crossed the area again last night. Interesting headline in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week. Because with the Wisconsin State Fair about 3 months away, it starts on August 4th, the headline, pay raises for himself and 31 others behind the firing of the State Fair CEO. State Fair Park Chief Executive Officer Rick Frenette was fired after he ignored the state approval process, gave himself and 31 other executives merit pay increases that totaled about $78,000. So change of leadership at the Wisconsin State Fair shortly before they really have to start hammering out all of the details of this year's program. We wish them well, and we wish the Illinois State Fair well because they'll have a new manager this year as well. We'll be talking about that later on. I mentioned at the outset of the show a story headlined BLM, that's the Bureau of Land Management. BLM boss says wild horse program facing future $1 billion budget crisis. Here's the story. The director of the Bureau of Land Management says it's time to admit his agency has a $1 billion problem. He says the administration cannot afford to wage an increasingly uphill battle to protect the ecological health of federal rangeland across the West, while at the same time properly managing tens of thousands of wild horses and caring for tens of thousands more already rounded up in government corrals. His experts estimate $1 billion will be needed to care for the 46,000 wild horses and burros currently in U.S. holding corrals over their lifetime. That does not include the cost of future efforts to shrink the population of the record 67,000 now roaming public lands in 10 western states. This all came about because back in 1971, President Richard Nixon signed the Wild and Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act into law. Now, that legislation allows for removals, but also grants the animals unique federal protection and requires they be treated humanely during and after their capture. But the director said, part of it is a recognition on our part that we can't solve this alone. We need partners coming to the table, whether it's states or counties or others. And he says the question is, do we have a sustainable budget to make sure we can live up to the commitments we are making when we move the horses? He said it's a double bind. There's a very real impact on the range where ranchers feed cattle when the herds are overpopulated, but he said it costs us $50,000 per horse if the horse lives out its whole life in holding. So he said every time the Bureau of Land Management goes out and gathers 1,000 horses, we are talking about potentially a $50 million commitment on behalf of American taxpayers. At the time when we have a lot of hungry people in this country and around the world. No more comment on that one. But anyway, next week I'll be checking in from Arizona where they're beginning to heat up and looking at temperatures in the 90s and 100s out there. And we'll be talking about the cattle industry and some of these ranchers who use land that's managed by the Bureau of Land Management to raise their cattle. We ended the week in the marketplace with the live hog futures lower. The July contract down 60 cents a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract ended down 12 cents. And the August feeder cattle contract up 15 cents. And at the Board of Trade, we ended the week yesterday with May wheat up 7.5 cents for the day. May corn down 1.25 cents. The rest of the month slightly higher. And May soybeans down 8.75 cents a bushel yesterday, with November soybeans down 9 cents. It was pretty much a roller coaster ride on that soybean market this week. As always, we appreciate your company on Saturday morning. Max Armstrong and I will be back next week, 5 to 6 a.m. Jim Fazell will be back as well. But that's our time for this morning on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.